Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who's about to sick the dog police on you. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Woof, woof, woof. How are things going with you?
Good. Just, it's been a shockingly busy week, and I am ready to talk about this show because it was one hell of a show, Fred. Before we dive into the kind of nitty-gritty of it, overall thoughts on Forbidden Door?
Good show. I would say a great show in like the general, you know, lineup of all-time wrestling shows, but not like it's not one of those AEW you know, one of the best 50 shows of all time or anything like that. It was solid. It was had several very good matches. I personally did not end up with anything that I think will be in my match of the year discussion at the end of the year. There is one match heading that way that just did not get there because of, well, we'll get to it. But otherwise, I thought it was a really fun show. I liked it a lot. And and a very solid pre-show as well. So
I am currently pulling up the events and Forbidden Door. Hold on. I want to. Dude, I am so bad at cage match.
Yeah.
Navigating cage match. It's.
Do we get the list of all the pay-per-views?
Yeah. I don't.
All right. I'm on it, brother.
I'm so bad at navigating cage match. It's awful.
Yeah, so right now, Forbidden Door is sitting at a 7.98.
I knew that part. I was trying to find all the events together, so like to rank them.
That is a very strong score, and also it is 20th all time for AEW, which is very funny. Just because AEW has had so many great shows and pay per views over its years, in such a short period of time. This ranks right between All Out 2019 and Double or Nothing 2024. All Out 2019 was main evented by Jericho and Adam Page for the first AEW World Champion. And I was actually in person for that show. So, best match on that was definitely the ladder match between the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros.
Oh yeah. Taking a look at cage match, you'll love this. Someone named Kenneth Amogus rated AEW a zero on cage match. A zero.
Normal and well thought out bidding, I'm sure.
I'm gonna read this to you because it's okay. pretty crazy. Quote, this is based off current AEW as I feel it is only right to do off the current product. I was very, very excited for an alternative when AEW started up. And for the first few years, the product was brilliant. The thing AEW has always had in droves is spectacular in-ring action. AEW's in-ring product was one of the best in the world when it was done right. Outside the matches, the booking has never been great, but has taken a real turn for the worse over the last two-ish years. The promise of sports-based presentation has become non-existent. AEW still has some good action week to week. Danielson Ospreay's was a lot of people's favorite match of the first half of 2024, although I think it was a sloppy shop. The issue I have with AEW is Tony's managed to make guys like stars from other companies look ordinary with terrible booking and the creative just can't make stars. Almost everyone who's a big star in AEW now was already made a man either on the indies or in other big promotions prior to joining AEW. Disappointed with where AEW is at now. Hopefully it strikes back. End quote.
You know, the paragraph, I agree with a chunk of it, actually.
So close to being a good paragraph. So close.
I mean, there's a couple of things that I think are wrong, but I mean, you know, obviously as a paragraph itself, that's a pretty reasonable take. I think in general, a zero is kind of ridiculous right off of that, you know, but, you know, maybe guys up in his heels, I don't know. It's also cage match rating. Let's not take it too seriously here. But yeah, I can't say that that guy's like out to lunch. You know, I agree with some of that. I do think AEW creative's been pretty down the past couple of years. I think the high water mark was Adam Page, you know, chasing and winning the title. And since then, I think the creative has largely not been nearly as strong. And I think a lot of the issues, you know, if you listen back to our show last week, my take was that the build to Forbidden Door is what really let me down, not so much the actual card and not so much what I expected the matches to be. I think they have made some stars. I think Adam Page has been elevated very well, and that was not from outside the company. Willow Nightingale is a huge success for them. They obviously made Jade Cargill what she is, and then quickly hit the ceiling of Jade Cargill. And I think, would you say Cody Rhodes really like became a top star in AEW, or would you say they did that on the indies before? I'm kind of leaning AEW personally, but it's close.
I kind of think of it this way. He baked the cake outside of AEW. He frosted it in AEW. I don't think you can necessarily have one without the other.
Yeah.
But it's not one or the other either. He finished the story, per se, in AEW as far as him being a star.
Yeah.
So when you kind of take a look at, and we've talked about AEW's development before, their biggest success, like true success, might be Willow or Anna Jay. I think as far as
Willow, definitely, as far as like getting someone over from scratch. MJF like kind of counts, I think, but also I don't know, like it's not like he was a huge star on the indies. He was a guy that was obviously rising on the indies, but I don't think that he was like a mega draw on the indies or anything.
The world of MLW never stops, Fred.
Right Yeah. You know, that's kind of, I think MJF needs to be folded in there, but I think a lot of guys have either stagnated in AEW not. Well, I mean, more or less stagnated. Yeah, I mean, like Lucha Bros are exactly where they were in 2019, just as an example. In fact, let me go over this this All Out 2019 card and just go over the people listed. I think the Young Bucks are still pretty much where they were, which is top guys in the company. But that was obviously based on, they got there because of a work outside. Jack Perry has been elevated. I'm going to withhold judgment on him a little bit. Kenny Omega and Pac are both exactly what they are. Darby Allin actually is another success story for AEW for sure. They've definitely done a very good job of getting him over. Riho and Hikaru Shida are exactly where they were back then, if not actually worse off, just because they sometimes just go into the ether and disappear for a while. I mean, Chris Jericho came in as a superstar and is still a star.
I think AEW can be better classified as a finishing school rather than a developer of talent.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to, you know, for them to develop talent when they're, you know, they've signed a bunch of veterans. I do think that could be a issue going forward, you know, they've signed too many older guys and that has kind of taken the oxygen out of the room for some of the younger guys. I think they very much, you could argue that they're in that situation right now. So, you know, with Daniel Garcia as a good example and Ricky Starks as another. So those are two situations that are going to be very interesting to watch moving forward, and hopefully they will not screw either of them up. But I don't know. I have worries about both guys in terms of where they are in AEW, and it feels like they, you know, especially Ricky Starks, because he's a little older and he's had some more prominent and longer pushes. It feels like he should be like if not a main eventer, like at that next level, and he's just kind of been whooshed away, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think you can now group Swerve into kind of that finishing.
Yeah, Swerve is. Yeah, Swerve's definitely a success story as well. He came in as a known guy, I think it's fair to say, but not as a top guy. And we now have him. I think he's been very much legitimized. Will Ospreay did quite a bit for him, and look, Swerve more than carried his own weight there. You got to consider Swerve, I think, a success story at this point.
And we're going to talk plenty about Swerve Strickland, but we're going to start from the beginning. And if you want to follow along, I recommend you check out Fred's results and review column that he posted at Voices of Wrestling live during the show, which was extra fun. Fred, let's start with the pre-show. I'd ask you the Rich Craich gimmick if you watched I already know you did.
Yeah, but did you? I mean, we get to use that gimmick this week because the flagship's off, so...
I did watch the pre-show.
Do you want to just steal all their gimmicks? You want to talk about baseball for like 30 minutes?
I could talk about the 2006 Minnesota Twins. Francisco Liriano doesn't get Tommy John in August, and he gets it like Game 7 of the World Series. That team wins a title.
He was scary.
Johan Santana and Francisco Liriano in Games 1 and 2 of a series. No, you're done.
As a Cleveland fan, it was brutal at the time. 100% brutal. So the pre-show I thought was very solid. What do you think about it overall?
I liked the five matches. One of them was thrown on there to keep Kyle Fletcher in your mind. And we'll just start there. Kyle Fletcher defeats Serpentico. And as you cleverly wrote in the review, I bet that jerk John Cruz blew off this booking. Just hilarious. It was good. I like that you had it in, like, just add it. Just say, hey, keep Kyle Fletcher in the back of your mind because the main event. Like,
yeah.
Little things like that are good.
Keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on it kind of thing.
Yeah. This was a squash. It was fun.
It's a fun little squash, I thought.
Serpentico can bump.
Yes, he can. Respect to him.
All right. Next match was the four-way tag match. House of Black, Brody King, and Malakai Black, or better known as Kings of the Black Throne, because of course. Defeat Gabriel Kidd, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Tomohiro Ishii, and Private Party. This was great.
This was a lot of fun.
A lot of action. I thought it was cool that Gabe Kidd got a lot of shine here. And he and Brody had quite a few spots together, which I thought was really cool. This was like a tag scramble. And it was just fun. A lot of dudes worked hard. And House of the Black gets the big win. And I went 4 on this. I thought this was awesome.
Yeah, this was a little better than I thought it would be because I it's always a question of just how much they're going to be able to do with the four corner tag match. You know, if it'd just be a little too much, nonsense, I guess. But this was a really fun, intense match. I liked it. I went 3 3/4 on it. Good effort from everyone. Private Party quietly turned into a solid mid-card team. I don't know that they're ever going to really get any higher than that, unfortunately. They're both very good at bumping, I think. I think it's Zay is really the spectacular bumper of the two. But they're both great at selling and really underrated aspect of the game. This was a fun little match and solid stuff, I thought. Really, really good stuff.
Agree completely. Next up on the pre-show, Willow Nightingale and Tam Akano defeat Chris Statler and Momo Watanabe. I liked this one a lot too. Willow. Oh my God. Willow might have been the most over wrestler on this show. Just
a huge reaction coming out. I would have to say there's one bigger pop later in the night, but it was someone who did not wrestle that night. So
that to me, that's a inflated pop, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a criticism, but when you're talking about who's more over, somebody who you know is going to be on the card and you know is about to come through that curtain, and then the music hits and they get that pop, that speaks volumes to me.
Yeah.
And, Willow, oh my gosh.
Willow is a superstar right now. Very hot. And they need to keep her going like that. I think the sky's the limit with her right now. She just genuinely feels very special.
I agree completely. This was a good match.
I also gave this 3.75.
I went 4 on this one. Everybody worked incredibly hard. I thought Nakano looked good. I've seen her before. I've never seen Watanabe. She had like that snarl on her face. Oh, I loved it. She's just kind of a badass. And I might have to go listen to Jumping Bomb Audio, the Resident Josie podcast for Voice of Wrestling, to kind of get some more info. Taylor and Kelly are experts in the field of Joshi. So if you want more information, go check them out. I'm sure they'll talk about this match on their next episode. Look, this was awesome. I would have preferred this on the main show, but I also think that it's good that you had a match like this on the pre-show, because it's like, hey, buy the show, because this is going to be the kind of stuff that you're going to get.
Yeah. And, I thought this was a very, very good tag match. I was a little concerned about Momo Watanabe coming in, but I thought she delivered quite well. So kudos to her. She hasn't been given a whole lot to do in Stardom other than cheat for a long time. A very kind of like ladies' House of Torture edition kind of situation going on. But she delivered here. So kudos for sure.
Next up. I think we may differ a little bit on this match.
Okay.
Mariah May defeated Saraya, and I thought this was pretty decent. I went 3.25, and I'm okay with that. I got bullied hard in our office Slack for going 3.25, but I mean, I'm more of an optimistic grader as a whole, and to me, 3.25 is slightly above average, which I thought this was.
Well, I did not agree. I did not think you could really call this match good, but I also do think you can call this better than expected. When I saw a Saraya match, you know, I think she's more or less shot in the ring, you know, and just not what she once was, but, you know, she came in and Mariah May helped her out a lot, obviously. I think there's a pretty big in-ring talent disparity between the two right now. But this turned out to be pretty okay. I went 2.5 on it. I thought it was like a little above average, frankly, but not really what I'd say good. It's not something anyone needs to go out of the way to watch or anything. But I liked it. I thought it was better than it probably should have been. I don't really know what you do with Saraya going forward, because I feel like it's obvious she's making big bucks to be working there, and she is a shell of what she once was. I think when she came into WWE right at the end of the Diva period, Huggy Cat running, you know, she was really a step up as a worker, but then. You know, she had that bad neck injury, and it's, you know, I mean, it's been 12-ish years since she made the main roster there. And she tries, but, you know, that whole crew, with the exception of Mercedes, are all more or less done. I got a cat to corral. She's going to cause some chaos here in a second. Hold on.
Gotta love the Hungy Cat run-ins. That's what makes this show a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm with you that I think Saraya is a little bit washed, and I just think that it would be best for her to be done wrestling, I guess, because she just does not have it anymore. But I don't know. I thought this was good. I thought that, you know what, I'm just going to be the high man on it, and I'll live with it.
Yeah, I got one later that I think I may have ended up being the high man on without really trying. But we'll get to that when I get to that.
All right. Now, the main event of the pre-show. This was the perfect pre-show main event to really drive home what the pay-per-view is going to be. Místico, Penta El Cerro Miedo, and Rey Fénix defeat Los Ingobernables de Japón of Hiromu Takahashi, Titan, and Yoda Tsuji. This was great.
It was great.
Oh, just a bunch of dudes.
It felt like an impossible match just like a month ago, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say it was a little odd, and John Carroll, who was on the show last week, host of the sometimes multiple times per year show Wrestling Omakase here on this network.
What a schedule.
Ah, what a great schedule. We need that schedule, Fred. it said it, and they were completely right. It's so weird when you have a LIJ tag and they come out under one person's music.
Yes.
That's just not a thing.
That's not their Japan. Deal. Yeah.
But I will say it was cool to get Hiromu's music. I think this is the first time he's wrestled on a Forbidden Door show.
I think so, which is, it should not have taken this long. I know he's not what he once was, you know, when he was literally, I think, maybe the most dynamic guy in the world before his neck injury. But he's still really damn good. And Yeah,
this was great. Místico defeats, I think it was Titan with the La Mística. This was great. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I went 4.25 plus. This was a ton of fun, and more.
Yeah, they really, in general, I think AEW has very much fallen into the traditional American wrestling company trap of, well, if you wear a mask, you can't be a star. And they got a lot of great luchadors that really are underutilized. And, you know, this is a good example of that, because, my God, Penta and especially Fénix and Titan and Fénix had some a stretch there towards the end that was just amazing. Some of the best super kicks you'll ever see. Titan sold one like he died, like 100% dead. And that was really phenomenal. But yeah, I love this match. I thought it was a blast. I wish that it had like 5 more minutes and was featured more. Like I would have rather honestly had that on the pre-show, or not on the pre-show, sorry, as the opener of the pay-per-view proper. But we got for that match to be free is you got lucky. People got lucky. So very good advertisement.
And now we jump into the main show, Fred. We start off for the second year in a row, MJF in the opener. MJF defeats Hechicero. Man, this was disappointing. I thought this could have been way, 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 way better. And it just wasn't. I don't think that these two had a chemistry to really be able to take things to a different level. MJF, obviously the hometown guy in Long Island, he was wearing Islanders colors, which were incredibly obvious for anybody who's ever watched a New York Islanders hockey game. This was good, disappointing. I went 3.5. I really thought that these guys could have had a better match, and they just didn't, which sucks.
Yeah, I hope for a little more from this too. I think I was overly kind with my 3.5 without sitting down to rewatch it though or anything. You know, can't really come to a conclusion on it right now. But It was not a bad match by any stretch, but it was, yeah, you know, I, considering what I think of it, MJF and Hechicero as workers, I was hoping for more here. And it also felt like kind of an afterthought on the card. Now, I'm not expecting like a 25 minute, you know, Hechicero at the exact same level as MJF match, but at the same time, you know, even given what they were going for with the booking and time allotment and everything, I would have hoped for a little better match. But, you know, sometimes it happens. I just don't know that these two guys click all that well. And I think that's why we got what we got, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of performance.
Yeah, just I really want to see Hechicero with more guys because he's kind of like just a mid-carder in Mexico. I'd like to see him more in AEW.
Yeah.
Like maybe do like a 3-month run where, hey, let's send like a Wheeler Yuta on excursion for 3 months to Mexico. Just be like, hey, go work CML for 3 months. We'll take Hechicero and put Hechicero in like a big program with somebody. Like, and he doesn't have to win, but yeah, just get some cool ass matches from him. And then you get somebody like Wheeler Yuta who could wrestle in a arena in Mexico for 3 months. And then that's like a fair partnership.
Yeah.
Just awesome stuff. But we'll kind of see what this partnership looks like moving forward because it actually feels like a partnership with yeah. rules. CML is incredibly hot right now and they are doing some great things down in Mexico. I recommend you go check them out. They're available on YouTube. It's a subscription model, but they are readily available on YouTube, which rules. Next matchup, The Elite versus Scissor Ace, which I will give Matt Caster a lot of credit. What a phenomenal rap. Just saying bitch like 30 times to drive home that Okada, you suck. Stop saying bitch. I thought it was just a perfect touch. And working the match, it, I don't know, it felt like a 6-man tag on a Cork and Hall show in the middle of June. Just in and out, nothing really special. I thought Anthony Bowens was the hardest worker of the match.
Yeah.
I think I gave this a gentleman's 3. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
It just kind of existed. I think they mentioned it on the VOW Patreon's instant reaction, but Tanahashi, get some new pants, man.
Yeah, and boy, figure out a new style because he keeps trying to work like the classic Tana style, you know, and time waits for no man, and it is done waiting on Hiroshi Tanahashi. It is brutal, really. It's just really tough to, you know, because he's when I got into New Japan, it was with him as the top guy and then the rise of Okada. And I'm glad I wasn't in a nostalgic mood on Sunday watching a bunch of classic Hiroshi Tanahashi matches right before this, because I would have felt probably even sadder than I did afterwards after this match. Just a real, real bummer to watch guys, you know, age. And but Tana, you know, Tana is what he is now, which is pretty damn beat up. And that's just going to be, I think, the thing with him going forward. The best thing he can do is kind of get hidden and just sell a lot in like a tag or a 6-man scenario. I thought his, you know, obviously wasn't so much his work, but the trios team with him and Okada and Ishii that ran wild for a while in New Japan last year was a lot of fun. And, you know, Tana, that's kind of where he is at this point in his career. Just got to kind of hide him away. And it's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate, but yeah, it is what it is. Like you said, time waits for no man. And it is Tana's time, which really sucks because, hell, just at the beginning of this company, Tana was the IWGP champion.
Yeah.
Which feels like forever ago at this point.
Impossible. Yeah.
I know. And they said, Excalibur said something fascinating on the broadcast. Okada spent 6 full years as the IWGP champion in New Japan.
Yeah.
How insane is that number?
It is. It's very insane. But I'm going to use that opportunity to springboard on kind of a. We talked about this some last week, but man, we got to get like a serious Okada push going, and not, you know, there's a lot. I think there's too much aha in AEW right now, and I think he might. You know, he's not bad at it. Let's be clear about that. But you know, I think they just have too many acts along those lines, and they probably should. You know, use the guy who can come across as a top card, like serious ass kicker, you know, along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least as a, you know, a Ric Flair, like heel who can kick ass, but is also going to cheat all the time situation or character, I should say. So I don't know, man. It's very frustrating. But this, you know, that wasn't the problem with this match or anything. It's just a thing I'm keeping an eye on as AEW carries on. And yeah, speaking of carrying on, the smooth transition.
Very good. Owen Hart Foundation men's tournament quarterfinal match. Bryan Danielson defeated Shingo Takagi. This match ruled, and
it was probably the second best on the night, I think.
Yeah, I loved it, like in retrospect, the Bryan Danielson I'm hurt again spot. But you know what I didn't like? Doc Sampson continuing to come out for these spots. No, don't have Doc Sampson come out every time. That part annoyed me. Because we knew Danielson was going back in, and they did the same trope, but he had a seizure last year at Forbidden Door when he faced Okada. Like, and that's a whole different one. But you don't need Doc Sampson to come out for these spots. That drove me bonkers, and it took a minute to kind of workshop how I felt about it and how it, like, properly communicate, because I just immediately went to the Slack. I'm like, man, I hate this injury spot, and everybody's like, well, I love it. And then Chris Samsa, sportofprowrestling.com, said, yeah, it's because Doc Sampson, and it's just dumb. And yeah, it's dumb. I hate it. But the injury stuff, it makes sense. It's fucking Bryan Danielson, of course. The whole injury story makes complete sense to work with him. But, man, that took me out of it for a minute, and then they got me back. I thought these two, if they would have had this match in front of any other crowd, if you put this match in Budokan Hall, I think you go, this could potentially be 5 stars. The crowd was awful for this match.
Oh, yeah, they were. This was not a good crowd until the main event. Which I think kind of points to maybe a changing of the demographic of AEW fans.
Which sucks.
Away from the true sickos. And true sicko would not put Ultimo Guerrero in a mask, but you know, I digress. It's just unfortunate that the crowd did not get up more for this, because this really was a great match. It was worked really well. And I honestly believe even last year the crowd would have been going out of their mind seeing Shingo Takagi, you know, having a great match, a great singles match. So this was a disappointment, you know.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We're going to get back to your show in just a moment. Before we do that, I do want to thank our sponsor, Arena Club. And one of my favorite card collecting memories as a kid were those trading card binders that everybody had. It was like a whole playground marketplace displaying, trading, and judging each other's collections. And while collecting has come a long way since then, and now there's a new way to buy, sell, and trade cards. It's called Arena Club. Whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the all-in-one trading card platform you have to sign up for at arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Yes, we have our own link, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. I am on there. I've bought stuff. I've traded stuff. I've displayed stuff. I love it. I think it's a great, great replacement for those old trading card binders. Nobody really wants it. You really want to lug that thing around to your friend's house anymore? No, you don't. You want a better way to do it, a new way to do it, a modern way to do it, and that is what Arena Club is. Arena Club has created a new way to grade, collect, sell, and trade your cards by converting the physical to the digital. You display your cards in your personal online showroom, or better yet, on your mobile device as well. When you're buying, no more shipping delays or cards lost in transit None of that stuff. Arena Club uses blockchain technology to deliver your card immediately, and you can buy with confidence knowing that every card on Arena Club is guaranteed authentic. Now, grading, it's all about grading these days, and the Arena Club grading process combines AI and human grading for accurate, fast, and transparent grading with full grade rationale provided and an explanation of how your card was scored. Trading, big part of the old schoolyard was trading. Well, now you can make offers, send trades, and interact. You can create your own personal showroom and start building your collection today. So now the good part. We told you about that arenaclub.com/VOWnet. It's even better. Right now, you can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to that link again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. And we thank Arena Club for sponsoring the podcast network.
It really
as far as the crowd reaction, but the match was great. I went 4.5 on it. One of the better, you know, pay-per-view matches you're going to see in a little bit. I thought it was just a blast. So,
yeah, and you know what? Danielson wins, and then he faces Pac on Wednesday night Dynamite, which we are recording this Wednesday morning. That could be really, really good. I also think that it's the winner's in doubt because you have Pac, who I normally wouldn't necessarily think he could win this match, but it's at Wembley. He's from the UK. You know, I think that there's a layered element there too. And we're also going to find out who the wild card is, which Hangman versus Danielson, if it ends up being Hangman Page. Sounds pretty damn good, Fred.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Danielson's gonna win. It doesn't feel like a big question mark to me, but you know, I think that it would be a pleasant surprise to see Pac get the win, but I just don't get the feel that that's what's gonna happen.
I think it's a non-zero chance that Pac wins.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's a guarantee or anything like that, but I think it's non-zero, and non-zero is good when it comes to professional wrestling. I will take that all day.
Yeah. I agree with that. I do think that there's like a, you know, it's probably single digits, but there is a chance that Pac could win, and that's preferable to a zero. So
100%, man. 100%. My computer's being extra slow today, which sucks because this computer's like 4 months old.
Oh man.
AEW Women's World. You what?
Oh, you go ahead. Go ahead.
AEW Women's World Championship. Toni Storm defeats Mina Shirakawa. I'm torn on this match. I hated all the camera cuts to Mariah May, but I will say the match was good. It was very good.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. I thought that they worked really well together. The triple kiss was way too porno for me. I get it. I get it, but just hug. You don't need to have a kiss. You just don't. And I did think that maybe you get a Mariah May turn here, but I was told no, it's too early. And quite frankly, I think they're right. But I thought, you know what, maybe you pull the trigger here. But overall, this was a really good match. I would love to see more Mina Shirakawa in AEW. I think that she connected really well with the American audience.
Yeah, she did.
And then eventually when Mariah does turn on Toni Storm, having Mina Shirakawa around would be great.
I think it would add to that a lot. Obviously, her stardom commitments and all that are going to keep her away. But I thought that they really actually spent a lot of time in trying to get her over, more so than I could argue anyone else on the card. So I think that was impressive that they put that much into her. And I think she delivered very well. So, you know, kudos to her for her success. She transitioned very well.
Yeah. Then we got the match I was looking forward to most on this night. Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Orange Cassidy. I love this. And look, Orange Cassidy might be AEW's biggest success story. And let me kind of explain my thought process here. You can talk about Hangman Page and elevating him when he already was on a clear elevation when he was in New Japan. And Hangman Page's one G1 that he worked, he got a pinfall win on the final night over Minoru Suzuki, which at the time was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And they believed in him, and it looked like they were going to push him. Well, he ends up going to AEW, which, right call, they did a 2.5-year story arc where he was trying to win the world title. Then he did. But Orange Cassidy, the peak of meme wrestling was Orange Cassidy. And yeah, he's become a consistent worker, a great technical worker. And he had a legitimate Zack Sabre Jr. match. Mm-hmm. Not only did he not look out of place, he looked like he belonged. He looked like he could hang with Zack Sabre Jr. on a technical level. That was awesome. And yeah, he is arguably the MVP of Forbidden Door, because not only that, he had a Will Ospreay match, and I gave that 5 stars. Orange Cassidy is arguably AEW's biggest success story, and nobody would have expected it. Like, this is the perfect guy to go out and have a great match, and you can give him a loss and nobody cares because everybody's still going to love him. And I loved it. I loved it. I gave this, I think, 4.5+. Just great, great, great stuff.
Yeah, I thought this was a blast of a match. I went 4.25 on it. Really great technical match. Frankly, they did what MJF and Hechicero couldn't, which is deliver a great technical match here. The crowd was into it pretty well. Again, not at, you know, what I would expect given past crowds, but, you know, for this crowd on their scale, like, they were damn near starting the riot. You know, it was a reasonable reaction, but I thought this was a really good match, and I thought both guys acquitted themselves very well, especially Mr. Cassidy. He continues to show that he is way more than just a comedy gimmick, and it's very good work for him.
Yeah, this was great. I don't know who you put Orange Cassidy with next year, but I'm going to start thinking about it. I'd love to see him try and do a lucha match with Yota Tsuji. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a really fun match, those two. I think we're definitely in the Orange Cassidy is losing a lot and sad about it stage. And, you know, I think that'll be obviously, you know, a key thing for him to get through. But, yeah, he's it's a great time for him. I think he's having a real, real good run.
He really is. Speaking of good runs, this had a way better run than it deserved to. Hook, Katsuyori Shibata, and Samoa Joe defeat the Learning Tree and Jeff Cobb. Fred, this was really, really good.
It was.
The placement on the card was weird. We had talked about it. The whole world had talked about it. They delivered in a really big way. The Samoa Joe, Jeff Cobb spot, they had never hooked up in the ring together. I think that's a perfect match for the upcoming Wrestle Dynasty, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. This was awesome. Hook hitting Chris Jericho with his version of the Judas Effect, which looked like an MMA move because it was not super clean, not super crisp, but it was violent.
It looked really good.
It looked really good, but it's because it wasn't like super smooth. It looked like he was trying to actually like hit him with a back elbow, which is that's what you try to do in wrestling. I gave this 4. I thought this was a lot of fun. This was way better than it should have been. The Judas Effect, I think, gave it that extra quarter star to make it a notebook match. I loved this.
I wouldn't go notebook on this, but I did think it was a very good match. I went 3.5 on it, like right at the tail end of like, you should check this out if you have time kind of rating for me. Yeah, this Dover delivered. I mean, granted, the guys in the ring are pretty good. I think there's questions with Hook, and I think Chris Jericho's age has been showing consistently. But, you know, these are the guys you put in a trios match. They had a very good match, and better than I, you know, would have expected coming in. I think Hook has some development issues he's got to work on, but I think he acquitted himself well here. Maybe the Judas effect looking so good when he did it is a hint towards how he can have better looking offense. Because I do think a fair bit of his strikes, mainly the punches, look not very good. But he's got, he has a certain level of charisma or a certain kind. He has been very over in points. I think they've kind of overexposed and used him at a point. But, I thought this was really fun. So kudos to everyone for pulling this one off. Jeff Cobb and Samoa Joe are a fun combo in the ring. Big Bill continues to be quietly good. And Shibata, I think, really started this match. I thought he was the best worker. And, I thought he was fun. But it was a fun match.
Yeah, this was awesome. I don't necessarily know how much I like the learning tree. It's inarguable that it's over. It is incredibly over. And I want to see what this ends up looking like long term, but I do think it could be really good. We'll find out. Next up, Jack Perry wins the TNT title ladder match over Dante Martin, El Fantasmo, Konosuke Takeshita, Leo Rush, and Mark Briscoe. Look, this was a lot of fun. This was a ladder match that I didn't necessarily want, but I thought that they worked incredibly hard. Mark Briscoe took a couple gnarly bumps. Leo Rush got thrown around in this match, and he looked great. Takeshita giving El Fantasmo the Blue Thunderbomb, exploding two tables, might have been the best table spot I've ever seen. And Jack Perry gets the win. I thought this was the right finish. I'll go 3.5 on the ladder match. I had fun, but I'm just so over ladder matches. I don't think that they really did anything next level to kind of elevate this, but it was very good.
Yeah, I thought this was actually a very fun ladder match. I think that there's a way to do them, which is a lot of big spots and also, some storyline in there. And I thought they did a pretty nice job balancing the two. Takeshita, I thought, worked very smart, did some subtle smart stuff I thought was very cool, like just knocking over ladders when he was in the ring just to make sure no one else could win. Like, that's just actually good psychology in a match that can easily be psychology-free. The storyline with Dante Martin's leg was a nice little touch. Mark Briscoe is a maniac, just absolutely out of control, and took a bunch of big spots in particular. I thought that more than Leo Rush, I thought Mark Briscoe was just bumping his head off, and very impressive stuff from him. But what else can you expect from Mark Briscoe? But yeah, I thought this was a lot of fun. Went 4.25 on it. I thought it was a highlight of the show.
Yeah, I love this. And then I think it was after this match, we got Wrestle Dynasty, or maybe that was after the Mercedes Moné match, but we'll talk about Wrestle Dynasty here. Look, it was awesome. You're going to get January 4th, Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome, January 5th at the Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Dynasty, essentially the Japan version of Forbidden Door. I think this rules, man. We have a chance to see some interesting stuff. I'm fascinated to see how they book the IWGP Championship and what they do with it, considering, well, it's the main attraction for the January 4th show, which is a historical day for New Japan Pro Wrestling. But overall, I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited for that show, too. And it'll be really interesting to see what we end up with. So.
Yeah. Next up, NJPW Strong Women's and TBS Championship winner take all, Mercedes Moné defeats Stephanie Vaquer. Look, I thought Monet was fine in this match, but I thought Vicaria looked like a star.
She did.
She outshined her completely. And then, of course, you get the fuck the Celtics chance about like two thirds of the way through the match, which was hilarious. How do you not know she's from Boston? I just thought the timing of it was fascinating.
Yeah.
But Vicaria was great. Just great.
She was fantastic. It's fantastic work from her. I think honestly, out of anyone on the show, the person that did the most to benefit themselves is Stephanie Vicaria. She worked incredibly hard and had, I thought, really a great night.
Yeah, she did. I would love to see her come in for a longer program. I don't think it's one of those situations where Tony Khan needs to re-sign her. I don't. Like, this is where the partnership comes in, and you bring her in for, I don't know, a program, and then you send somebody down to Arena Mexico. Like, I think that would work great, but she is so much better than most of the women on this roster. And
instantly one of, at worst, the top five workers on that side.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying that the women's roster is bad.
No.
Jesse Collins wrote a piece for Voice of Wrestling earlier this week talking about how AEW's fixed the women's division. I think he's spot on. I'll read you this, Fred, because I wrote a piece in September or August of 2020 talking about the women's division. And I specifically wrote that I thought the women's division was very well booked.
Yeah.
Because, well, I'll read this.
Okay.
This is the end of my piece. The AEW women's roster needs time to grow in front of a national audience, on camera, in front of the crowd, and most importantly, in the ring. Waiting until more of the roster can get back. I used to the United States because of the Joshi involvement, but as a whole, because, you know, pandemic, is a good thing because you don't want to create an inferior impression to the viewer. That's why I thought, like, some of the limited exposure that they got early was good, because you don't want to throw a bunch of people who aren't ready for television and who aren't very good yet to all of a sudden, hey, you need to do this. Well, I'm not very good yet. I need time. And yeah. I finished it off like, well, things haven't been perfect over the near year-long venture that is AEW Dynamite. There are signs all over that the women's division will be successful. As a wrestling fan base, we have to fight the urge to want instant gratification, because this is a venture set up for long-term sustainability, not a short-term payday. And that women's division has paid off. It is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting better because after the match, Fred, Dr. Britt Baker DMD's music hits while Monet is celebrating in the ring. She comes out, does the pyro, stares her down, and then walks to the back. I thought that was perfect. Just be like, no, you're coming into my company and you're going to act like this? No, this is my show.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was a great reaction she got, frankly, from the crowd to get that huge pop. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what they do moving forward. But, you know, I think a feud between those two. Who would you have be the heel? Because I feel like it's a pretty obvious answer. But
it's got to be Mercedes. She's got to go heel. This fan base does not love her. Like, I think maybe Tony Khan might have thought. And I don't think you can bring her back as a heel from day one. I just don't.
Nah, it makes sense to bring her in as a short-term baby face, but she's just such a natural heel that it feels inevitable that she's going to be used that way. And, you know, I think given, you know, Britt's status as like a AEW original, kind of a cornerstone of the roster, first woman signed, et cetera, she's the perfect person for Mercedes to go full heel against.
Yeah, this was awesome. I'm excited to see Britt Baker back in AEW. Tony Khan mentioned, I believe it was with Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer, that she was just cleared to return to the ring. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm really, really excited. This could be a great thing for the women's division. And we talked about it because the women's division doesn't just have title programs. They have undercard programs now too. Statlander and Willow Nightingale, Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa. Like,
Serena D and Thunder Rosa.
Yeah, you're talking about four or five women's programs, because now you have a roster that can support it, because it's a quality enough roster for national television, not just to wrestle in general. And I think that's the key. That's why I said, like, if they're not ready and they're not quite good enough for television, just don't put them out there, because it's, yeah, there's a certain amount of, there's a balance of equality and equity that you have to have. You want to give them chances, but you also don't want to put them in a position where if they stink, it damages what you can do in the future. And I thought everything that they've done so far has been really good to build up a quality division. Now you have it, and now you go full bore, which is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Great analysis, Fred. I love it.
Happy to help. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool how they've improved. Yeah, I actually am quite optimistic about the women's side of the roster at this point in time. And, you know, I mean, Anna Jay returning, hopefully she'll be in a pretty good spot. You know, we're just waiting on Jamie Hayter, too, as the only person that's really hugely notable and out right now. But I think they've just got a very promising roster.
Yeah, I'm really excited. All right, now let's get on to probably the most disappointing match in the entire card. Tetsuya Naito defeating John Moxley for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Based on expectations, this match sucked. Yeah. I was really, really disappointed by this. People are saying that Moxley and Naito don't have chemistry. I disagree. I just think they stunk tonight, or on Sunday night, because if you go back and watch their G1 match, oh, it was great. They had great chemistry. Sometimes it just doesn't click for a night. This was one of those nights, and it's super, super disappointing, super frustrating, but what can you do? It just is what it is. I think I gave this like 3.25 plus. Like, just really disappointing to see that, like, Naito's knees are washed. We know this. And Moxley, as great as he can peak, he can have duds. And I just think that what they tried to do just didn't work. But Moxley coming out of the back wearing the New Japan track jacket was awesome. I think that officially makes him Hantai. But
I guess so.
Man, he feels like he would have been an old school Suzuki-gun. But yeah, disappointing.
Yeah, it was. I think I may have been too kind to it when I gave it a 3.5 stars. But, you know, I mean, they did not. I thought that they tried hard. I thought that Mox in particular was working really hard to try to make this something, and it did not work out really. I think this crowd, you know, it's not like they were given something that was fantastic, right? Let's be clear here. But at the same time, they were, you know, it's like you start out cold at the beginning of the match, and, you know, I thought that there were some good moments where they just got nothing from the crowd. And that was before, like, I was like, okay, I get it. You know, this is definitely a big disappointment. But, like, they didn't give Naito anything as far as a reaction, which was just kind of brutal. And the crowd was very mediocre, I thought, which was very unfortunate.
Yeah, the crowd really didn't care about Naito.
They were very much up and down before the main event, I thought. A lot of down, too. You know, and I trust me, I know that AEW has been kind of a cold program, and New Japan's not what it once was. But, you know, like, you got matches like Orange Cassidy and Zack Sabre Jr., who everyone should be familiar with both those guys, especially, you know, obviously, OC, but, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. has been a known guy for a long time. And to not, you know, to be kind of dead for that match, you know. Or we're not talking about, like, you know, being underwhelming for the Jericho six man because you're so tired of seeing him, or, you know, the Cesaro match because, like, you know, that was a kind of nothing, you know. But hey, you know, I can't really say that Mox and Naito did anything to really win the crowd back at the same time. So, Yeah, there is a certain amount of it's on the performers, and I thought this was one where, you know, maybe it started out hotter, but or started out at least at a level where they should have gotten more from the crowd. The crowd was not giving them enough, but yeah, we by the end it was like, well, you know, this makes sense. So
yeah, let's get to a good match.
Yes, this main event, man.
Swerve Strickland defeating Will Ospreay to retain the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. This was great. This was so great. And I loved it from start to finish. I actually thought at one point they were going 60 because Double or Nothing, they went 33 minutes past time where Tony Khan went past the standard 4-hour pay-per-view window, and everything they were doing was so slow and deliberate and paced where I thought, man, it feels like they might be going 60. Well, I ended up being incorrect, but that's okay. This was 27 minutes of great storytelling, great action, and you had Will Ospreay who said screw it mid-match and just went for a tiger driver, and he didn't end up hitting it, but no hesitation, no like I don't even know what the wording is, but no crisis of conscience, that's what it is. And it was just so well done, and I thought the I think Ospreay got hit with a German, and then he ended up like he hits on his shoulders and then pops up, and then like, oh, Swerve's right in front of me, I'm gonna whack him with a hidden blade. I thought that was a great spot. The where Ospreay's going for the ass cutter and Swerve jumps up on the ropes and Ospreay's like, you know what, I think I could still hit him. So Swerve jumps up and stomps him down into the ground. It looked a little clunky, but I think that's the beauty of it, because it was two guys that knew each other so well, thinking on the fly and making it happen. I thought it was great. This was great. The Don Callis spot with the screwdriver, because that's how he helped Ospreay win the IWGP US title last year, was perfect. Ospreay's like, no. He almost uses it on Prince Nana, which I thought was borderline, but he then throws it away, and then they just get back to wrestling. It didn't really impact the match. It didn't even come close to impacting the finish. I almost went 5 on this. I went 4.75 plus. This was so good.
I thought it was a fantastic match. I was taken out of it by the screwdriver nonsense towards the end. I've just seen too much of like, we can't just have Will Ospreay be telling great matches telling great stories by having great matches. We have to have stories and acting. And, you know, it felt like time stopped forever when he was staring at Nana. I know that realistically, it wasn't that much time, but it felt like it. And
it was like 5 seconds, Brad.
Yeah, but it felt like forever. And, you know, at least when he rolled right back into the ring, he immediately ate the kick from Swerve, which was at least like, yeah, that's what should happen if you stand outside the ring and stare at a guy and threaten them with a screwdriver and then, you know, kind of lollygag back into the ring. But yeah, this was, a really strong match. I went 4.5 on it. And I thought, you know, by the end of it, that it really did a lot to help legitimize for Strickland, because not only was it a great match, but it was a great match where Swerve like was he more than held his own. I thought that he showed himself to be on an equal footing with Will on this night as a performer. And I thought it was very good. I thought it was very good for him. And I liked it a lot. I thought it was a great match. I'd love to see these two do it again. It feels like maybe they're setting that up for All In. We'll guess. We'll see.
This won't be All In.
You don't think so?
No. The only way this would be All In is if Will Ospreay is the wild card.
Oh, right. With the tournament. You got me there. I've been trying to talk myself into this being, you know, the rematch being all in for a while now. So maybe they'll do another rematch the other night. I'd like to see it. But yeah, this was great. I liked it a lot.
What did you think of the report that came out that said Ospreay wanted to do a program with him so people would stop talking about Swerve being the placeholder champion?
Well, they're friends, so you know, and it's, you know, it's obvious that Will is going to end up the champion sooner rather than later. Like, it, you know, it's not going to take 5 years for him to get there. I felt like a reasonable thing, you know. I don't need like a year long Swerve championship run. You know, we're kind of up to half a year now, which is longer, honestly, than I thought, you know. But I thought I think it's been pretty good, generally speaking. And I think this is the high water mark. And I think, you know, I think it's clear they probably weren't really looking to change the champion at this point in time. So it's not like Will had to really put up a fight or anything, I don't think. But I thought it ended up very good as a storyline and as a match.
Yeah, this is this was good. I thought the show overall was good. It was the worst Forbidden Door show, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was not anywhere close to a waste of my time. And now we're on the road to All In with a massive, massive Dynamite coming up later tonight as we record this. Hangman Page is likely the wild card against Jeff Jarrett. Bryan Danielson versus Pac. Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander. All Owen matches. This is shaping up to be a massive, massive show, and I can't wait.
Yeah, it should be very fun, and I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. And with that, thank you guys so much for listening. Please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. Let us know. And I did this on my Viking show. Let us know what your favorite thing to cook is. Apparently, Fred, I heard that they make iguana in Florida.
Oh, that's interesting.
I had multiple people tell me that on my show, including my producer, who was in the Air Force. And I'm like, what? Hmm. I'm like, what is this? The water boy? Is mama making it? But no, apparently it's a real thing. So if you've ever had iguana, please let us know. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Have a great day.
Bye now.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.